Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some, just not always in a timely manner. So I get a message today from my friend Francis, and he says, hey, where's the AL 650 podcast coming out? And I'm like, oh, I did that like months ago. And then I went and looked so I could tell her what it was, and it's like, well, where's the podcast? And then I went and looked, and I'm like, where's the audio files? Then I went to Zoom. Where's the audio files? So it turns out they are in the trash, but not deleted, because you only get a certain amount of bandwidth or storage with Zoom. So I was able to recover them and get them downloaded. And told Francis that it'll be out later today, which is today. So that's what I'm doing, getting this out for you. So a bonus for all of us. AL650 is a paddling race in Alabama that is 650 miles long. Pretty cool, huh? And the registration opens January 1st. So as Francis said, this is good timing. Anyway, let's get it done. And now I got to get all the rest of them in for the end of the year. So we still have Quest World Championship episode and Strong Machine and a special one for maybe New Year's Eve. We'll see. Anyway, enough rambling. Let's get this posted before I lose it again. So, fast is slow. No, slow is fast. Have fun. Take some chances. Be careful. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Can you hear me?
No, I can.
Oh, sorry, I'm just rummaging around while I'm waiting.
Well, how are you? I had to go. Good. Turn off the stove, cooking the dog's food, supper.
Oh my, gourmet doggy.
Yeah, well, she eats organic beef. And
even I don't eat organic beef. Lucky so, dog.
Yeah. I mean, we literally buy her a cow. And we have three freezers.
That's so adorable.
Yeah, well, it keeps her healthy, and that's what matters.
Exactly. Yeah. Hi, everybody. It's nice to see your faces off the water.
Yeah.
Oh, I should probably turn my video on.
Yeah. Only if you're...
Sorry.
Only if you're decent.
I'm decent. Julie's picture is really scary.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Julie messaged me. She's driving, but she should be able to be on the call. So,
oh.
Yeah. Anyway, well, everybody's here, and I got the audio working. That might be a first. Yeah, and this might be the most geographically spread out that we've ever been with a podcast.
Could be.
So, all right, who wants to go first? Who wants to introduce themselves first? We should let Ryan go because I don't know her.
So I'm Ryan Gilligan, and I actually live in Alabama along the Alabama 650 race course. So it's my home race, and I did it the first year they had it in 2019 and again in 2020. This year I was out with an injury, so I was part of the race crew, the staff.
Yeah. And I'm going to assume that you're a paddler, do a lot of paddling since there's two paddles next to look like the front door.
Yeah. I don't have to decorate, just throw some paddles around.
Yeah, that's kind of the way our house is too, so. Well, cool.
We have somebody new. And I guess theoretically you're taking Scotty's place.
So Scotty and I were both on staff this year and have been involved with the race ever since it started.
So cool. I think Scotty's got a date with Scott Barbosa. And that's really hilarious for 7 people in the world, and don't worry about it. So, all right, who's next?
Francis?
Jennifer, you're next.
Okay. Well, all of you have somewhat met me before in many different ways and places, but I'm Jen Fratsky. I'm here on Oahu. I've been paddling the ultra stuff for, I think, since 2018. I used to be more of a sprint racer. So, it's still new to me. I'm still learning every time. I've done the AL 650 twice now, last year and this year, and probably next year.
So, was there a difference between this year and last year being the year from hell, just as the racer, was the race just a race?
There was a huge difference. I mean, I keep thinking about it. I was thinking about it earlier today, actually. I mean, there was a lot more flooding this year, so the water levels were a lot higher, which did make the scenery different in places that would have shown, I guess, more islands from what I remember in 2020. it was different. It felt different, and it felt more familiar. Obviously it was kind of interesting to go down the course and slowly start like regaining some memory of, oh yeah, I remember that, and oh, okay, that looks different, okay, that's not as scary, and kind of knew where I was going a little bit more in a sense. The bay was completely different this year than last year for me, so that was the biggest, like, whoa, this is crazy. The biggest difference, yeah, was the bay for sure. Just the condition wise.
Yeah. So, hey. Okay, Francis, who are you?
I'm Francis Iscox. This year I was a support crew for our German paddler, Bruco Prüfer, and I'm an aspiring AL 650 participant, maybe next year, the year after.
Yeah. Is that your plan right now, is next year?
Yeah, it's looking like it. So I'm actually flying down to Alabama tomorrow to go do the qualifier for the 650 with Ryan as my support crew.
Yeah.
Double trouble.
This is like way too groupy. Click. I feel a little left out because I wasn't there. So,
yeah.
Oh, and last but not least, Julie.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay, great. Well, I'm Julie Arden. I also live in Alabama. We are in Baldwin County in Orange Beach at the finish line. And I did the Alabama 650 with my husband. We were used to 10-day races because both of us have done expedition racing, but wow, this was a lot different, and it was very, very challenging. But we, I hate to speak for my husband because he still has no feeling in his left hand, but I think it was an incredible experience and absolutely loved it.
Was it harder racing with your husband with just the two of you as opposed to like a 4-person adventure race team?
My husband is a beast and my favorite team, and I think it would have been harder without us. He motivates me to want to, you know, continue and go further, and so I think that the race itself, I think the hardest race I've ever done was Raid the North in the British Kootenays. For some reason, that really got me, that and the Georgia. But the hardest event was Papua New Guinea trekking, but this would be the next hardest thing I've ever done. And I think it was just because it was, with adventure racing, you're on the bike till you're sick of it, and then you're trekking till you're sick of it, then you're in the kayak till you're sick of it. this isn't an option. You're in that kayak for, you know, for us, 8 days, 9 hours and 17 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. That would get hard to do. So.
And actually, Randy, kayaking is a click because Ryan is the best. I've been trained to say that. So, but yeah, the paddlers, kind of like adventure racing community, the paddling community is pretty tight knit and will do anything and bend over backwards to help somebody achieve their goals. That's an amazing thing. I've really enjoyed that aspect of it.
I have to say about the community, the first race I showed up to, I went to register and the lady said, "Where are you staying?" And I said, "At a free campground." She said, "No, you're not. You're staying at my house." And she didn't even know my name yet. And that was my introducing to the paddling community. And it's been like that every race I've been to. We just all walk away as friends.
Yeah, very cool. Well, Ryan, since you're kind of, you're representing the organization, what is the Alabama 650?
So the Alabama 650 is, of course, a 650-mile kayak race. It starts up in North Alabama, close to the Georgia line on the Weiss Lake, and crosses the state of Alabama to finish up at the Gulf. And so it gives you that kind of source-to-sea feel. You start off in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. You can actually see mountains at the start line. Then you go through Big River. There's 9 portages through dams, so it's a series of lakes and dams. Then you cross the delta and go through the estuary, kind of winding creeks, and then a 50-mile bay crossing, and you end up at the Gulf of Mexico.
How much of the race then is moving water, and how much is lake and non-moving water?
Yeah, so of course it depends on water levels and dam release. When I did it in 2019, we had a half mile current for about 10% of the race. There was no moving water. 2021, we had a lot more flow. So maybe 1 to 2 miles an hour for maybe half the race. So for us, that was flying. Like we couldn't hardly keep up with the racers because they were going, you know, 5-6 miles an hour instead of 3-4 miles an hour. But it is definitely a paddle race. You have to paddle and earn every mile of that race.
Yeah. So what is your role in the race? Like this year, what?
So this year we have 9 portages, and at any one time, up to 5 of those portages can be open. So we're coordinating with the volunteers and getting those portages open. Each portage has a mandatory downtime. So each boat has to be checked in and checked out at the portage. And then Scotty and I, we nicknamed ourselves the roving reporters, and we were helped out with the social media presence for the race this year.
Yeah, which I think you guys did a pretty good job, even though I might've complained a time or two about you should hold your phone horizontally and not vertically.
we're still learning.
Yeah, that's my pet peeve, but I've learned to accept it. I won't do it, but I have accepted it. So what can I say? So Francis, what was your job this year?
So this year I went down to be support crew for a racer that came from Germany who, because of COVID restrictions, couldn't bring his own support crew. So my job was to follow him down the course and make sure, you know, help him with the portages and make sure that he has everything that he needs to complete the race.
So what do you mean help him? Can you help move the boats? I mean, what can and can't you do as a crew?
Oh yeah, definitely. So you help with the portages. You are not allowed to paddle out to the boat on the water and follow the racer on the water. But I think pretty much besides that, so I carry the boat during portages. I restock, like repack the boat, get the trash out, set up his sleeping equipment, make food, break camp, yeah. Go to Walmart.
Yeah. So you do everything except the paddling.
Yeah.
So, and Jennifer, well, we know you're a paddler, but what boat did you use out of your arsenal of things to choose from?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have much of an arsenal. I only have my amazing boat, actually, that I use my friend's boat that actually, speaking of community and us being so tight-knit, Francis actually ended up picking it up for me in North Carolina on the way down from Boston. It was my support crew from last year, April Zilg. It was her boat, which I have the same boat here on Oahu. It's the Kahele by Puakea Designs. So that's the boat that I use. It's the only boat that I know how to paddle thus far. This year I'm going to be learning how to kayak double blade. So that's a big goal for me this year, but yeah, so that's the boat. It's an outrigger. So, actually I did use a stand-up paddle board for the rapid section of the, race, which kind of funny, created a huge uproar the stand-up community, because I guess it had been like, I don't know if it was the first time that someone used a stand-up or the first time a female used it, but it was interesting. I do come from a stand-up background, so I used to race stand-ups for Hobie, so I know how to stand-up paddleboard pretty well, but this stand-up paddleboard was not it wasn't like a race board, like a traditional race board that I'm used to, like a 12-6 or a 14. This thing was like short and stubby and inflatable and bouncy, but I was only on that for God, what is that section, Ryan? Like 8 miles or some more? Yeah, or less. 7 miles.
So yeah. Scott did the stand-up paddle board the first year and didn't make it to the cutoff at checkpoint 2, but he did go through the rapids on the paddle board.
There you go. Okay, so first female. But I spent probably a third of that time on my knees, because it felt like I was on a trampoline. It was really weird. But mostly I did it on an OC1.
Yeah, so you can use different boats, or what's the ruling there?
You can basically use any boat that you bring to the check-in the day before, any boat that you show and register. You can pretty much use, you can swap it out as many times as you want. So you've got a lot of people that will switch from double blading, you know, in a kayak to doing OC1 and whatever else. We can use whatever. So I guess, I mean, the advantage of that is obviously in the flat parts, you can use, you know, something a little different than some, then use in the flat parts, you can use something different as to where when it gets a little bit more choppy and crazy, you'd want to maybe switch it up. So it's an advantage. So if you have an arsenal, it definitely really helps. And it just, you know, it switches it up. So if you get uncomfortable.
Yeah, I get that. This is probably, Ryan can answer this. Do a lot of people use multiple boats?
Most people do, because you are doing flat water, white water, and crossing the bay. Another option for people who aren't whitewater paddlers is there's an outfitter for the whitewater section, and you can rent, like, you know, they take kids through there every weekend. You can rent a little sit on top and do the whitewater. And that's what I did the first year.
That's interesting, because I would have never thought that. I would have thought you get in your boat at the start and you get out of it at the finish. So my day is complete. I've learned something. So Julie, I mean, it's, you know, it's your home race, but what was it about this that made you actually do it?
Yeah, I keep asking myself that, especially when I, you know, contemplate the neuropathy. But when I first heard about it, Scotty actually had approached me, and we thought, yeah, let's jump into this race, and found out we couldn't just jump into it. We were supposed to qualify. And so Scotty, you know, tells Greg what our background is and says, you know, we'd be happy to do the chase kayak, or, you know, the safety kayak. And he allowed us to do that. So 2019 was the first year, and we were allowed to be the chase kayak. And so we made it up to Coosa River Adventures was as far as we had to go. And then we kind of helped along the course at a couple other spots. So it was on my list. I wanted to do it. I just needed to know if I could do 650, and I wanted to see the Alabama rivers. And there's something that just has always attracted me about the Mobile Dance Tensaw Delta, that whole Delta area. There's so much history with the Native Americans and the formation of this area that I really wanted to see it. And there's no better way to see it than to just get in the water and paddle it like the Native Americans might have done. So, and there's an area called Bottleneck Creek that will just take your breath away. It is so incredibly beautiful. And then of course you get to the bay section, and you know, who doesn't want to say they cross the bay? And that really was the most intimidating section to me, because I'm from here and I know how dangerous the bay can be. It's open water. And there are ships, and it's used for commercial traffic, and there's boats, and there's, and then the conditions can be horrendous. So we got in the boat, we used a, Epic V8 tandem surf ski that we borrowed from some friends of ours, Cindy and Dave in Texas. And we used that in the flat water. And for the bay and for the whitewater section, we used a Barracuda AR Duo that my husband had ordered years ago from Auckland, New Zealand. So it's what the Kiwis use to play in the Indian Ocean. So, you know, it's good with the big water. So we used that for the first section of the bay. But by the time we cleared Point Clear, the bay was as calm as you could ask it to be. And by the time the sun went down, we were paddling on glass. It was incredible. So all my fears and all my concerns were right out the window. And we took the V8 out again, the Epic, and we made it, finished it off in that.
Is that a little, is that always kind of in the back of your mind in a race like this, that, you know, you got this finish that could be, let's say, epic. That's a nice word. So do you think about that the whole time, or you put it out of your mind?
You know, my jam for this race was Natural by Imagine Dragons. And that was my song. So you know, I contemplated the finish and I wanted to see the finish, but it was not until we hit Claiborne Dam that I allowed myself to think that we might finish. And part of that was I posted on Facebook a picture of my husband's forearms after day one. He just blew them out. And we had been training down here and he had such horrible tendonitis and something else going. Then he got some of the worst chafing I've ever seen. And, you know, there were so many things that man could have said, I quit, and nobody would have blamed him, but he kept getting back in the boat. So I didn't allow myself to think we might make it until the Claiborne Dam, which was the last portage. And then when we crossed I-65, we celebrated with some Nutter Butter cookies that another racer had given us when they were given our support crew when they were leaving. And that was important because we had two vehicles for our support crew, and our Jeep broke down in Selma, Alabama. And we had a new support crew. They had never done this before, but they were awesome. Their only job was to drive the thing down the river and you know, meet us at the portages, and they did a great job. But when they had to decide what they were going to leave behind and what they were going to take, they took the two guitar cases with the guitars and they left the food. So we were eating a lot of gel. So when this other racer gave us his food packs, that was really pretty awesome. But we still had our frozen food in ice chests, but the snack food that you take in the boat was gone, except for the gels. So it was fun. Lots of challenges.
Yeah, before we get off topic about the bay, I just kind of wanted to throw in there, I thought it was interesting that Julie says, you know, when they rounded Point Clear, the bay was glassy. That's what's interesting about the bay, is that it can just throw anything at you at any time of day. And for me, and I know three other people behind me,
our experience in the Bay was gnarly. I mean, I know for me personally, it was the section of the race that just put me on my ass. I mean, I was actually terrified at one point, thinking I was not going to finish the race in the last 9 miles because my boat was going to break. And I was so delusional and just tired and didn't know. I was making poor judgments. I went way too far out thinking I could handle it, being, you know, from Hawaii, where we're in rough water all the time. But when I say rough water, it's like rough water in our favor. But the Bay this year for me, and I know Dan Voss and gosh, I'm trying to think who else was around me. I'm having a brain fart, but I mean, we just, it just,
oh, I think Mirko was behind you.
Yeah, Mirko, it just killed us. I mean, we all of us, I was watching the tracker, got off the water. I ended up in an area where there was just waves coming from every direction. Of course, I have my AMA, and my AMA, if it goes underwater enough and at the wrong angle, that thing can snap. I mean, it's hollow, it's made of carbon fiber, but it's known to just snap in half. And I mean, it kept going under. And speaking of the fishing boats, there were a bunch of, I just remember a bunch of boats, and I mean, they were coming super close to me. And all I could see was all these birds, like hundreds of birds, and all this netting and all this stuff. And I thought, you know, I called my support crew, and I actually remember telling them, I was crying and I was like, I need to get off the water. It's pitch black outside. I feel so defeated. The shore is so far away. I don't know how I'm going to get there. And then of course, when you get to shore, there's just break walls everywhere, and all the docks are broken from the hurricane. So there's nowhere to get off the water. And you're just searching. And finally, I ended up finding like a broken kind of hamajang dock, not a dock, but like a boat ramp, and was able to get off the water. But this whole ordeal was about 2.5 hours long, and it just destroyed me.
Yeah. I think maybe we talked a little bit about that kind of stuff, fear on the water and stuff, but what's fun about that?
You know, right now I can't say that was fun, because I just, yeah. I was actually, it humbled me. I was like, oh my God, I'm this, like, I feel sometimes like such as, you know, a badass ocean woman. Like, I'm always priding myself and like, I know the ocean, I know the waves. And the Bay was like, oh no, you don't, girl, you don't know. So yeah, it's
scary, and I don't want to minimize their experience, because it is tough. And even Joe and Paul tell you, I think, that they had a rough experience, but I don't want you to think that it's not manageable. My husband and I knew what the Bay, we know what the Bay can do. And we trained out in the bay and in open water on a pretty regular basis. So we were kind of ready. And the boat with the net.
Oops. She'll come back. Yeah.
That's the entire race. The entire race. There's nowhere to pull over.
Yeah. Is it the Bay? Is it just because of the way it is, or all the boats, or why is it so, or is it just the ocean, and it can just be, that's what oceans do?
It's shallow open water, so it's affected by winds and tides.
Another thing is, you go south for 30 miles and then you have to turn west for 20 miles. So no matter which direction the wind is coming out of, it's going to be terrible on one of those two legs. So you're never going to get a good downwind leg all the way across the Bay. If you can get a down leg for the first half, but then it's going to be broadsiding for the second half. So when it does get windy, it's going to get bad at some point.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, and also I thought there was a big factor was sort of when you're coming in. I think the people who came in first had the windiest conditions, so they had really big chop. And then I feel like over the next 2 days, it sort of died down. So
it was a front moved in from the north. So we had a north wind blowing 15 to 20 for the first 2 days finishers, and then it pass through. And then the second 2 days, the finishers had that calm water.
Yeah. So it really just depends on like where you are. It's complete just luck.
Yeah. Luck. Yeah. Or well, it's a lot. Yeah. So one final question about the Bay for Jennifer. So after you have an experience like that, does that translate, do you think, later to like, well, this isn't as bad as it was in the Alabama 650, so I'll be okay?
I've never anywhere in the world in my experience have experienced what I personally went through that evening. I mean, it was definitely not manageable. I mean, it was not safe for me to be on the water. I mean, I'm shocked that my boat didn't break. And I mean, I guess maybe it's different that I was on an OC1, but it was definitely not a safe situation. And looking back at it, I definitely made a bad judgment and should not have been on the water. And I mean, everyone else pulled off of it. So that just goes to show you, it just wasn't, I wouldn't have made it. My boat would have broke for sure. Or I would have broke. But yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, I get that. So Francis, you're doing support for a paddler. How often do you see them? You know, what's your day like when you're doing support?
It really depends on the section of the river that they're on or lake. There are sections where you really can't get to them for maybe, 50 miles at a time. I think we probably could have, had we sort of known each other better, we could have had bigger time intervals that we didn't see each other. But I think I was worried something was going to go wrong and I wouldn't be there. So I followed him down the river pretty closely. And oftentimes it was, you know, like he just paddled through, waved at me, was like, fine. And he didn't actually stop and pull over. You do end up driving between the portages quite a bit and the different boat ramps. And I don't know how the others did, but I was alone as support crew. So my sleep sort of happened in like 1 hour to 3 hour blocks at best. Was good. It was good fun. I highly recommend it.
Do you think that that's maybe not required, but should maybe be required that you have to be support before you do the race?
It is required.
It's got to give you a good idea what's, it is required?
Oh, that you have support.
I'm sorry. That you should be support crew.
Yeah. So you see what you're getting into. What did you think you were going to be doing, and how did that compare to what you actually had to do?
I actually had a pretty good idea because Jennifer has a great podcast that she did with her support crew, April, where she talks about what they had gone through in the past. And I was able to reach out to a bunch of the racers before the race. So that was very, I think it was pretty accurate. So I think I had a good idea of what I was going to. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, very cool. It is, when you're doing support, do you have to like have everything, or are you in communication and your paddler can say, well, this is what I'd really like, you know, can I have a Big Mac at the next takeout, or do you have to plan for anything?
I think we started out, so because we were also just trying to get a sort of hang of getting support, like my racer wasn't particularly, he had done a race, which doesn't have, like he does a long distance race, usually the Yukon River Quest, which actually does not have many stops. So he's not like used to having racing with a support crew that's available at such short intervals. So it took us a while to get into a rhythm of sort of being able to, like, for him to tell me what he needs and for me to have it ready. Try to anticipate what he might need. Sometimes you also just try to bring things that they might not ask for, but maybe will appreciate. Like when it was really hot, I brought him slushies and ice.
Those surprises are always the best, right?
Yeah. You know, I show up with a pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. You can be, anybody will be your friend if you show up with pizza. So how long, I mean, an average stop, you know, if you weren't going to do a portage, how long would would he be out of the boat? Or did you just give him stuff and tell him to keep going?
It really depended. So if it wasn't a portage, sometimes he probably wouldn't even get out of the boat, and we would just swap things out and just, readjust things, and he would keep going. But it's a really long race. So like if that person wants to get out of the boat just because like that's the one thing that they want to do, like they should get out of the boat. I definitely did try to, it was hard because I think from adventure racing, I'm sort of used to trying to keep the transitions down to like the minimum amount of time, but this is such a long race that you definitely, I think, have to take your time and do what you need to do.
So Ryan, since your organization, how long does the race take? What's the fast time and what's a slower time? Finish time. So
we had a new record this year with all the fast water that was just under 6 days. You have up to 10 days to finish the race, and your portage times don't count towards your finish time. So each portage has a mandatory downtime. You add all that together. And it's 4 hours and 45 minutes. So we subtract that from your finish time. So you have from 10 o'clock Saturday morning until 2:45 on Tuesday morning, 10 days later, to finish the race. Most people, we haven't actually had anybody finish on Tuesday. Most people finish between Saturday and Monday. So like 6 to 9 days.
Yeah, interesting. So are the mandatory portages just like a safety thing so people aren't run like idiots?
It's designed to be a paddling race, and that's why the portages don't count. Like if you watch the South African races or New Zealand, and you like every paddler, they're like, what's your strength? And they say running. Like, this is not a running race. This is a paddling race. So you could actually never touch your boat during the portage. If it's a long portage, you can drive it. Your ground crew can carry your boat. They can car top your boat. So the portage is there, but it's not going to make or break your race. You're not going to win this race because you're a good runner. So a lot of the aspects navigation, we give you a GPX track. You don't have to have a map or navigate. The whitewater section is short enough. It's not going to make or break you. It's all about that forward stroke and paddling. So it is designed to be a paddling race.
Yeah, I like that. That's very cool. You're going to win on your paddling. So cool. So Jennifer, how long did it, I mean, you're experienced in long distance racing, but how long does it take you to realize that this is going to take you a week?
The first 9 miles. I don't know how to answer that. I always tend to psych myself out in the first 9 miles, really, like up until the first portage. I'm like, oh God, like I still have 600 and what? I'm horrible at math. 641 miles to go. So and then throughout the race, you kind of go in and out of like, I got this, I don't got this, I got this, I don't got this. And it's just kind of a constant battle between mind and body and what you're capable of and what you think you aren't. And but like I said, how you had asked me earlier, the difference between this year and last year. I mean, I think that there's a couple different factors. The first one is that kind of what to expect the second time you do it, but then again, it ends up being a bad thing because there was a couple sections where I was like,
oh God, I remember this section. This is going to take forever. Like, so yeah, it's goes back and forth.
Yeah. So Julie, how do you break down a week of paddling?
One bend at a time. So we didn't paddle 650 miles. We paddled 30 to 50 miles at a time. And to the next pits, we either had pit stops or sleep stops. So it was just the next 30 miles. And so, you know, just get in the boat.
Get in the boat. So what do you do for, what is your sleep strategy? And I kind of want to know that for everybody. So,
well, when we get to the point where my husband's about to flip the boat to make me stop, then we sleep. So, now, so we are literally, my race experience was different than Jennifer's because my husband and I were competing to complete. So finishing was winning for us. I was not competing against another boat. I was competing against the voice inside my head that said we could be in Hawaii. We could be at home sleeping. You know, that's where we were. And that was our mindset. So, you know, how you do it 1 mile at a time and you try to enjoy what you can of it.
Yeah. Interesting. So Jennifer, how much sleep did you get during the race?
Well, I got, my crew and I were just talking about this. I probably got about 11 hours. So I do what's called tactical napping. So I've done a lot of research on like military strategy on sleeping and power napping. And definitely like you got to practice it. It doesn't work for everyone. And I think it's a learned, you know, exercise. So I did a lot of power naps. There was only, I think, two or three times that I slept like, you know, a 2 hour, and I think there was one time I did like a 4 hour, but I really only did like 45 minute, 15 minute naps. And then, you know, I think everyone's kind of watching, like for me, I know Julie was just saying like for them it was a finish. For me it was I always say like I want to finish, but this year I had a specific goal. I definitely didn't want to get any less than second. I wanted to beat my time from last year. So I was, I knew I couldn't beat Sally unless she got injured or something. I just, for many different reasons. And so my goal was to beat my own time, and which was, I think I ended up beating it by 23 hours or something like that. So I was really happy about that. And then of course, just watch the people behind me. And I'm like, okay, if they're sleeping for 4 hours, I can only sleep for two. Or if they're sleeping, you know, 2 hours here, maybe I can sleep that much. And it's a strategy for sure, for me at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So Francis, did you get more sleep or does your racer get more sleep?
I think it was about the same. He definitely, I think he was sleeping about 4 hours a night, and then you know, I would sort of clean up, try to maybe get a couple hours and then get up before him to get everything ready, but then I would send him off. And you know, I had a bed in the back of my truck, which was super helpful. So I would just, if he was on a longer stretch, I would just sleep anywhere.
Yeah,
I slept in a parking lot of a laundromat. I slept at like abandoned boat ramp in the middle of nowhere by myself. Like it was great. Super.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one thing that people, probably this audience knows, but people really need to know that support is maybe hard, maybe at least as hard as doing the race, and maybe harder because you're working, you're not having all that fun paddling. Yeah.
Absolutely. I've never supported anyone myself, and it's definitely a bucket list, but I can definitely agree. I mean, I saw Francis throughout the race many times, and I was just, I have to say, girl, I was very impressed with everything you were doing. I mean, she, I remember at one stop, if I wasn't hallucinating, she had Christmas lights strung up like on the back of her car and everything out nice, like a little restaurant. Like it was just, it was amazing. So yeah, support crew is just absolutely crucial. And shout out to my own support crew. I had two people that I had never met before. I actually put a message on Facebook, and Alfred Andrews, who attempted this race, I believe in 2020, him and his wife, Debbie Galvan, they just jumped right on it. And man, they made my race. I mean, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have done as well as I did. They were amazing. I mean, I couldn't have done it without them. And I will agree that definitely, even though I haven't done it, it seems as though being a support is a lot more difficult than, you know, being a racer, because all we have to do is paddle, you know, they got to do everything else. So it was nice to see you, Francis.
It was nice to see you too. I really love seeing your support crew too. They were really awesome.
Francis and my great crew ended them. Up kind of they kind of ended up being best buddies. It was awesome.
There was one night where we were waiting for you guys and we stargazed. It's
pretty
good. Yeah.
So Ryan, so this is a race. How many people show up to race, and how many people show up I don't want to say prove it to themselves, but to do it.
Yes, we call those our Kilimanjaros. You know, they're there to race the course to get to the summit. So we had probably half and half that were racing versus just out there to meet the challenge and finish.
Yeah. That's a good mix. And how many people raced? What was the field?
So we had 13 teams racing this year. I think we had 17 last year. And I don't remember the first year. The first year we only had three finishers. It was the first year, the inaugural race. So we're definitely growing.
Is this a race like where like the first year it was just, God, I hope we finish. And now that it's, you know, you get a couple years in, it's getting competitive.
So the first year we had a good mix of, we had nobody in the middle. Let me say that. We had elite racers who knew what they were doing. And we had people who had no idea what they were doing. They were just, this sounds like a great challenge. And they were in, you know, plastic boats or whatever. But it was like, if you knew enough to know this wasn't for you, those people weren't there, like the middle group. It was one of the extreme or the other.
Yeah, I get that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But much props to them that did show up that first year, because, I mean, they all paddled and put in a 24-hour race. So I was impressed with what they did do.
Interesting. So Frances says she's leaving to qualify. So what do you have to do to qualify for the race?
Oh, yeah. So there are a set of qualifying races that are specified on the registration website. And for most of them, you just have to finish them. And I think for maybe one or two, there's a time in which you have to finish them. So
you're getting your qualifier over early, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing, because I just ran into Ryan at the 650 and she offered to crew, and I said, yes, please.
Perfect. So, all right. So we're going to wrap this up, because I get to have popcorn tonight. We're going to watch a movie in a little bit, but this is kind of my favorite part.
What are you watching?
I don't know yet. Okay. You know how it is, all these movies and you don't get to watch anything, but I will say I went and saw the Bond movie this week, and you should definitely go see it. That's my recommendation.
Okay.
But I have these amazing athletes here, and one of my favorite questions and how I like to finish is like, so what's next? So Francis, we know you're going to go paddling, but like, what do you got cooking for the next 6-8 months, year? What's on your list? What are you thinking about?
Oh, me?
Race-wise. Yeah.
Well, I just heard from my adventure racing team recalculating that we're going to do the Rootstock 4.5-day race in June. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be the big thing. And then in hopefully in October, the Alabama 650. I'm also hoping to rope my dad into doing a distance biking race in the Czech Republic. So,
yeah, cool. And are you getting settled into the new place?
Yeah, yeah. It's it's my attic.
yeah. Looks good. Looks like an office.
Yep. Gotta get my boats set up in the garage, and it's pretty good.
So cool. So Ryan, what do you do besides being a ridiculous paddler, and what do you got coming up?
So my next race will be the Everglades Challenge, 300 miles from Tampa to Key Largo, and then the 650 again next year.
So how does me that lives in South Dakota and hates water, how do I know all these races and all you people that do all this water stuff? I don't quite get that. So, Julie, what do you got going?
As soon as we can get back, we're going to Papua New Guinea, and we're going to do portions of the Ghost Mountain Trail over the Owen Stanley Range again, and we're going to try to go and see a couple of World War II planes that were downed and GPS coordinate them and see if there's some way we can establish some trails and bring some attention to the area so they can get clinics and try to develop some tourism. And hopefully, I was just reading something today that there might be an opportunity to go this summer, and that would be something you have to train hard for. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So Alabama 650 again next year?
I'm giving away my paddles and my kayaks and my PFDs and I mean, really, you can come pick them up. We have a yard sale.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out, right? So, Jennifer, what do you got going on?
Oh, well, I got a whole lot of back issues going on. So I am taking a little break from paddling. But as I said earlier, my whole goal next year is to learn how to double blade. So I think I'm going to be buying an Epic V10 Sport. I think that's what it is. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to get one of those and, struggle all year on that. But my next race is actually going to be with my partner April Zilg. We're going to be doing the Wild Buffalo Relay, which if you guys ever get a chance to do that race, it's so much fun. It's like just a weekend of yoga and hiking and just getting together on Catalina Island off the coast of Newport, California, and it's a 41-mile relay race back to Newport. So yeah, it's a really fun race. It's a relay. We're going to be doing it. It's put on by Puakea Designs, the creator of our boat, our Kahele that we both use. So yeah, I'm just kind of looking to take a little bit of a break. And then, yeah, I'm excited. I hope I get to see all you guys again next year. It sounds like everyone has all these fun adventures planned. It's like just so exciting. And I look forward to following all of you and keeping in touch.
Yeah. Well, I think you all will. Cause I mean, it's the paddling family. I don't know who can answer this question, but is the paddling family smaller or larger than the adventure race family?
I think it's,
as you probably know, you're kind of in both of them.
Yeah, I think it's smaller and maybe more tightly knit. So just from my experience from the German racer coming in, he came in without boats. And by the time that he was at the start at the check-in, he had two boats that people agreed to lend to him, and then two more boats that were kindly forced onto him at the check-in. With like all sorts of gear and just, people let him leave their boats like at their house, and just like amazing just kindness. And I don't know that I've quite seen that in the adventure racing community, but maybe. I think it's a bit more complicated.
Yeah, well, I see that a little bit because, yeah, you guys, it's hard to travel with boats. So I see how that could be really nice to have that group. And like, yeah, you could use my boat this year, I'll use your boat next year. So that's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Anything we didn't cover, anything we really, really need to know about paddling or the Alabama 650?
It's amazing, and everyone should try it once in their lifetime.
Yeah. There you go.
Randy.
I would be there. We'd just take a camera. Then I don't have to do it.
Randy, the roving reporter, holding the phone
there you go.
Vertical instead of horizontal.
No. Horizontal.
The opposite. Horizontal.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to quit. So everybody should do the Alabama 650 at least once. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Julie, thanks for having to drive home in the dark, but taking time to talk to us.
Thank you, Randy.
I don't know about you, Jennifer. You're in Hawaii, so whatever. And
it's a tough life.
Yeah, Francis is probably late there. And Ryan, go do a night paddle.
Nice to meet you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
destination, yeah, yeah, to a place that doesn't have.